This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining us on the Jodcast today is Dr. Joe Mottram from Leiden Observatory. Hello and welcome to the Jodcast, Joe.
Hi, thank you very much.
And now you work on the formation of massive stars. Can you tell us a bit about how this process works?
Sure. So you start off with a molecular cloud which is full of gas and dust. If this is particularly massive and dense, then gradually regions will form within that are much denser. Then the material begins to accrete and fall in. You end up with some sort of flattened structure because any angular momentum has to be conserved, and so it flattens.
So hang on. So angular momentum, let's say, yes, like an ice skater spinning around, they have,
yes,
a lot of angular
so
momentum.
Exactly like an ice skater spinning. If they've got their hands out, then they spin fairly slowly, but as they begin to pull their hands in, they spin very quickly, and it's just a conservation of that angular momentum. So then eventually you begin to form a star at the centre of this disk of material. And the thing with massive stars that is different is they eventually start ionising their surroundings, and they're very bright and powerful, very strong radiation from it. And so that can actually begin to destroy the cloud that they formed from.
So by ionise, you mean that the hot star at the centre that she's starting to form gets the cool molecules like hydrogen and helium, I guess, around, and then they make them charged in some way?
Yeah, so much of the material is molecular hydrogen and carbon monoxide mainly. And the radiation is energetic enough that it can destroy the bonds in the molecules and make them into atoms, and then it can actually start stripping off the electrons, and so you end up with all these charged particles.
So how is massive star formation different to general star formation of smaller stars like our sun?
Well, one of the ideas that's been around for a while is that we observe for stars that are on the main sequence, and I should explain what that means. That's stars that are like our sun in the sense that they're just sitting there burning their hydrogen and going about the main part of their lifetime. That the more massive a star is, the quicker it evolves. And so you then have this question of, so does that mean that the massive stars form quicker, and you know, is there something special about the conditions that you need to form them as opposed to just form from the same amount of material, just forming a number of smaller, less massive stars?
So how have you gone about answering this question? Do massive stars form faster?
Sure. Well, back in about 2000, we started a systematic survey of looking for these massive stars in a particularly young phase of their lifetime. So at this point in their lifetime, they're still probably undergrowing, they're gaining mass, but they're only really visible in the infrared and of sub-millimeter wavelengths. So that's kind of like the heat from your radiator rather than the kind of things that we would see with our own eyes. And so we've gone ahead and found a whole load of these sources, which means that we can start to classify them and then understand if we know how many of them there are compared to how many of these stars we see when they're burning hydrogen. We can actually use a ratio of that and our understanding of how long the main sequence lasts for these massive stars to be able to work out the lifetime for the earlier stages of their formation.
So these massive stars, they've been in this molecular cloud, they've spun round, they've formed a disk, mm-hmm. and they're starting to form a core, and that's the stage that you're looking at to time.
Yes, it is.
And how long, well, first of all, actually, how massive are we talking in terms of these stars?
So these stars are at least 8 times the mass of the Sun. Incidentally, this is also kind of the magic number that you change from a star that is going to go through the kind of evolutionary path that our Sun will go through to a star that can actually explode in a supernova. So there's kind of that transition there as well.
And how long do they go through this stage of being, is it this pre-hydrogen burning, this stage that you're looking at? How long do they stay on that stage for?
Yeah, so from the results that we've got recently, it's of the order of a few hundred thousand years. So this is very, very fast compared to the amount of time that they'll be burning their hydrogen for, which is more like, you know, several millions of years. So it's a few, maybe 5 to 10% of that amount of time.
And what about the smaller mass stars? Is that about a comparable time scale? Is it bigger? Is it shorter?
So one of the classic ideas for that has, or the numbers that that people have been deriving for a while, has been that you're talking about a few million years or more before it actually reaches the main sequence. But actually, we're beginning to think that the phase where most of the mass is accreted might actually be of a comparable length to that we observe in these high-mass stars.
So if they're occurring back the same length of time, the small mass stars and the higher mass stars, that must mean their infall of material must be a lot quicker if it's the same type of period on the sequence. Can you possibly elaborate about this?
Yeah, so with massive stars, the kind of mass accretion rates that people talk about are of the order of 10 to the minus 4 or 10 to the minus 3 solar masses per year. So that is, you know, in the stretch of 1,000 to 10,000 years, they'll gain the mass of the Sun. Whereas the kind of accretion rates that people talk about for low mass stars are more like a factor of 100 lower than that. So actually, if they're taking about the same amount of time to form, these low and high mass stars in the same region, but the accretion rates are different, this probably tells us something about the preferential location of where the massive stars form in a cloud as opposed to where the low mass stars form.
And do the massive stars form in big clumps? Was it one massive star and a few smaller stars? Is it isolated massive stars? Or do we not know yet?
For the most part, we think that massive stars form in multiples, congregations. So to give you an example, most of the O stars that we know about in the Orion...
So O stars are the hottest stars, the biggest stars we've got.
Yes, so these are the bright blue stars. These are, when you look at the constellation of Orion, several of those bright blue stars are O stars, and actually in the belt there's the Orion Molecular Cloud, which is the nearest high-mass star formation region to us. And within that there's quite a lot of these O stars. And actually, when we've gone back and looked with higher resolution, we found that most of them are in binaries. So we know that most massive...
So by binary, sorry, I just want to jump in there, you mean
yep.
Double stars?
Yes, so we mean two stars that are all orbiting each other, as opposed to just two stars that are separate and sitting there near each other.
And in low-mass stars, you expect to form into little clumps, but in high-mass stars, does that not just use all the material nearby? How can they form together?
Well, that's one of the tricky things, actually. So at the moment, you almost have the reverse problem. Is when you're trying to form a massive star, why does it not break up into lots of little stars? And one of the things that we think is that if you actually warm up the gas a little bit as it's collecting together, this actually stops it breaking up into multiple stars. Just by supporting the gravitational collapse a little bit, just enough to stop that breaking up into little smaller stars.
Okay, thank you very much.